Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
To our new listeners, welcome. To our old listeners, welcome back. Another episode of Magical Education awaits you, but first we would like to say a few words.
Nitwit, blubber, oddment, tweak. Podcast 9 3/4, topic of the week is, why do wizards need money? Hey there guys, I'm Jem.
And I'm Rhea, and it's time to brace yourself for another episode where neither of us know what the fuck we're talking about.
Yeah, two in a row. Sport and then money.
Sport and the economy. Two things I just actively don't take an interest in.
Did you happen to look, like, on our Google spreadsheet about, like, what we said about economy or money or anything like that?
I did. A lot of it was just like, what are the goblin rebellions? Why do they have money? Do the goblins control Gringotts or does the ministry control Gringotts? Just a lot of like basic shit. Like we don't understand anything about how it works.
Yeah. Yeah. That's because Rowling wrote a series about a magical school and then was like, oh fuck, I've got to actually create a world around this. But yeah, she just didn't really bother with
this
that.
This school has to be part of a society of some kind.
Right.
My favorite question that we had was, why is wizarding money whimsical rather than functional? Which I think is going to define this entire episode.
Yeah, that's true. Because, like, you know, 17 sickles to a galleon, 28 nuts to a sickle, right? Something like
infuriating.
That.
Infuriating.
Yeah, just dumb. Like, and this is from the land that has the metric system, so...
No, well, the wizards use the imperial system.
Oh, right.
Even if they have the metric system. They're still doing things in, like, feet and inches and shit.
Yeah, that's true. Unpleasant. Basically, I guess my first point, the Harry Potter universe is blatantly capitalist. Arguably even more capitalist than our real world. Let's discuss. If we're talking about why do wizards need money, I guess we could start with the idea of, like, well, Gamp's Law, right? Wizards can't create food out of nothing. They can't create money out of nothing, right?
Yeah, except let's obviously you can.
Yeah, let's start there.
Yeah. So we've talked about, what is it? It's the exception to Gamp's Law of Elemental Transfigurations. So we assume that Gamp's Law of Elemental Transfiguration means that you can transform one element into another element.
Yeah.
And that works all the time, except for these handful of exceptions, which are food... can't transfigure food or conjure food, and money, which you can't transfigure or conjure. But, as we've spoken in the past, that doesn't really make sense in either case. Because, like, I get the idea that you can't transfigure or conjure, like, currency, like coins, nuts and galleons and stuff, but Hermione does that.
Yeah.
So, obviously it is possible. It's just that they would be counterfeit coins. Like, I could take a galleon and cast some sort of replicating charm and have 20 galleons or whatever, but they would all have the same serial number on them. So, if I just kept doing that indefinitely, eventually I would get caught. But, like, you could probably get away with it a little bit.
Yeah, you physically can do it, but realistically, societally, legally, you can't because you'll get caught. So,
yeah, I feel like a lot of the, like, objections that people have to the economy in the wizarding world is just like, well, why can't you just use magic to solve this problem? And it's like, well, probably you can use magic to solve this problem, much in the same way that I, a regular human, can create my own money. It's just illegal. And if I get caught, I'll go to prison.
I also think, I mean, that's one point. That's one clear thing that we can logic out. There could be another explanation, and I hate to throw it in this early, but upon my studies, I say studies as if it's an actual thing, in my research...
Instead of Googling wizard money.
In my research, I came across a realization that this is skipping ahead, way ahead of my points, but
okay,
not many wizarding jobs are about manufacturing or producing raw goods, right? So things like
doesn't
metals,
seem like it.
No, yeah, metals, timbers, food. Like, they're just not being produced by wizards. We know that the concept of wizard agriculture and farms exist because mm-hmm. there's this thing called the Nogtail, this creature that hides as a farm animal in your farm but actually leeches the farm of all productivity or something like that. And there's also a mention of eel harvesting and an eel farm in Goblet of Fire. So there's aquaculture.
God,
yeah.
Okay.
Amos Diggory mentions an eel farm or some shit, and so that gives mm-hmm. us the evidence of aquaculture. And also we know that, well, we don't know this, but there's speculation that there's some sort of harvesting of insects for things like fizzing whisbies and like billywig stings. I just don't think they're farming insects. I think they're just fucking picking up insects off the ground. But anyway. Yeah.
It seems like the Weasleys have, like, pigs and chickens and, like, grow some of their own food.
So there's some sort of evidence of agriculture, which means there could be wizard farmers out there, right? But mm-hmm. we just really don't hear about it enough. And, like, that's a big part of the economy, right? Agriculture, aquaculture. So it makes me think that it's just not really a thing, like, large scale, right? So some dude might have an eel farm that he eats his eels from or whatever. I don't know what you do with an eel farm. Or the Weasleys might have pigs and chickens and stuff that they grow their own, they get their own produce. But I just think that the majority of, like, raw material production and harvesting is not done mm-hmm. by wizards. It's done by elves, right? Because we know that elves have this food magic. They can create food. They transport it up through the dining tables in Hogwarts. And that's sort of their own thing that they can do separate to wizards. Wizards can't just conjure food out of nothing against law. But elves have this exception, right? And it makes me think...
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like, I thought that elves couldn't conjure food out of nothing. They were just, like, cooking and preparing food that was sourced from somewhere
else.
Yeah,
but I also think they're growing the food.
Yes, I understand.
Continue. Slavery.
Yeah, slave labor.
Yeah, and so then I was thinking about the other raw materials, right? So, mm-hmm. like, metal. And we know that goblins are associated with manufacturing jewelry, weaponry, mm-hmm. things made of metal.
Yeah, metalworking is a huge part of, like, goblin culture and stuff.
I just started thinking maybe certain precious metals and precious stones, things that make up the currency of the wizarding world and the wealth of the wizarding world, can't be manipulated by magic because they're manipulated by goblin magic, right? Mm-hmm. So wizards can't just be casting spells on them. Like, you can take a galleon and change the date on it to indicate your secret meetings and shit. And you can replicate galleons, maybe. But maybe you can't, actually. Like, maybe you can't take a galleon and replicate it because it's not your magic. It's not that kind of thing. I don't know.
Okay.
It just got me thinking about that.
How I assumed that it would have worked is, like, okay, so I replicate a galleon, now I've got 20 galleons. I go to the store. Yeah, they're all the same. I go to the store, I spend those 20 galleons because the shopkeeper's not checking the serial numbers or whatever.
Yeah, that's fine.
Eventually, through the economy, those coins make their way back to Gringotts, and the second mm-hmm. a goblin sees them, he's like, that's a fake coin.
Yeah.
Now it's time to trace it back to wherever it came from.
Yeah.
And maybe the goblins do that, but more likely that's passed over to the Aurors, and the Aurors track me down, and then I go to Azkaban forever.
Yeah.
Because we know that Griphook takes one look at the Sword of Gryffindor, and he's like, that's a fake.
Yeah.
So I think they just can tell fakes immediately.
That's definitely a high probability, but it also could just be... that you can't. You just can't, because, like, working with precious metals and manipulating precious metals is something that goblin magic can do and not wizard mm-hmm. magic.
I'm trying to think of a time where we see a wizard, like, conjure a bar of gold out of thin air or something.
Because
I'm sure
the only example we have is Hermione, right? She gets a common coin and mm-hmm. she manages to do an enchantment on it. So she's not, like, replicating it. She's not creating more of it. She's just enchanting it so that it shows a different date so people know when to meet up for a secret meeting, right?
Oh, I thought she, like, created a series of fake coins.
No, I think she just had those coins and she just gave them out to people. She might have just withdrew them from her own account. So
she dropped a fair amount of money on that scheme then.
Yeah, I think so.
Like, that wasn't chum change. That was a galleon to every single member of the Order of the Phoenix.
Yeah, because it was given a particular name. It was like Protean Charm or some bullshit. Because Annie mm-hmm. McMillan identified it. He's like, oh, you put an enchantment charm on this where it's like, you know, it burns hot so that we know to pick it up and look at it, and then it tells us when the next meeting will be. It's the same thing as a dark mark. It's not like she's created these coins out of nothing or has duplicated these coins. I think she's literally withdrawn maybe half a dozen or a dozen coins from her own account and has changed them all so that they all sync up and stuff like that.
That is, like, she's dropping big money on that, though, because there's, like, 24 members of the Order of the Phoenix. Not Order of the Phoenix. Dumbledore's army.
Yeah.
And we haven't got into this yet, but that's anywhere from, like, 200 to, I don't know, $1,000.
Yeah. We don't know. I mean, were they all galleons?
Yeah, they were all galleons.
All galleons. Yeah, look, I'm more willing to believe that, even, because Hermione's not poor. Like, you know, her parents are dentists. I think, like, she might have just had the change to do
just
it.
Just dropped money on that.
Okay, I don't, cool. Like, she bought her in dress robes. Like, she's not exactly poor or unwealthy.
Yeah, but look, we weren't raised poor or unwealthy, but I still couldn't drop several hundred dollars on, like, a scheme with my friends without my parents at the very least knowing about it.
Yeah, I understand that, but also J.K. Rowling does not give a fuck about math and doesn't care about these things or think about these things.
Look, that's so valid of her. Neither do I.
So she would have just been like, oh yeah, Hermione withdrew this and changed them, and without thinking of the fucking exchange rate and being like, Hermione dropped maybe $7,000 on this idea. Fucking Hermione putting money into this Kickstarter, I guess. But yeah, I mean, prove me wrong. Like, I don't think that she can duplicate a galleon. Like, if my argument is correct and goblins are the only ones that can manipulate metal like this and create their own precious metals, I think that that makes more sense than the idea that, like, oh yeah, it is just a legal thing that you will get caught out eventually. Because the rule is, you can't. Like, you physically can't. So,
yeah, but, like, that rule that you physically can't is, it's just hand-wavy bullshit. Like,
yeah,
you
true.
Can. Obviously
but what
you
if
can.
You physically can't?
Yeah,
okay. And I've come up with a compelling argument.
Compelling argument. You can't is your argument. That's an argument.
Yeah, well, no, because the goblins have, like, a monopoly over this, have a control over this kind of magic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they're allowed to continue running the economy, even though there is all these rebellions and everyone likes goblins and everyone hates them.
Yeah.
Because they're the only ones that can do this.
Okay. We're going to have to agree to disagree here, because I don't think you're right and you don't think I'm right. We're just going to get stuck on this point all episode.
I think you're right. Like, it makes sense, but I just think that there's, like, let's talk about it. Like, okay. I think that there's another option here. When I was all looking more into the economy of things, I kept coming back to the point that wizards fucking hate goblins.
Yeah, they
so
do
why
hate
do
goblins.
They continue to let the goblins rule their giant wizard safe full of all their gold? Like, it just doesn't make sense. So let's talk about this option that could possibly make sense.
Okay, fine.
Okay.
10 minutes in, we're yelling at each other.
My God. Capitalism.
It is very interesting that goblins have such a privileged place in society where they control the economy and run the only bank, another point we have to come to.
Mm-hmm.
And they're also so despised. But, like, I don't know. I kind of see it like lawyers, I guess, where, like, everybody hates lawyers is the common joke, but they also are incredibly important and serve a massively valued function in society. But, you know, with an extra element of racism there.
Yeah, obviously. And also,
yeah, obviously racism.
There wasn't, like, the lawyer rebellion of 1632 because there was a wizard out there disenfranchising and killing lawyers willy-nilly.
Yeah.
And they weren't, and lawyers weren't second-class citizens that couldn't get access to guns like everyone else.
Yeah, and
know?
Lawyers aren't also a separate race. Like,
yeah.
It's not a perfect metaphor. I'm saying it's similar.
No, I don't think it's the same. I really don't. No. Because also, like, let's start with Gringotts, all right? I know we're going all over the fucking shop.
Yeah, I would really like to take a more structured approach to this episode.
Well, you started.
No, I didn't.
What? Yeah, Gamp's Law. Okay, no, I said Gamp's Law first. Sorry.
No, you.
Okay.
You started talking and I've been trying to keep up.
Okay, fine. You start with your arguments. We'll come back to this goblin thing.
Okay. What I wanted to start with was just, like, basically, what do we use money for? And, like, do wizards need money for the same things?
Okay, fine. Let's start with that.
Okay. Just, like, a real basic introductory argument.
Sure. Well, okay. Okay.
What are the things that we use money for?
Trade. We trade goods and services. Money can be used to exchange for goods and services.
Yeah, money can be used to buy many peanuts.
Yeah, that's it.
So I had like rent, mortgage, bills, taxes, basic necessities like food and clothes, education, transport, healthcare, and then luxuries and leisure. Those were the things that I could think of that we use money for. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we can immediately cross out education because wizards get free schooling.
Do they? I thought well, you had Hogwarts, to pay to attend Hogwarts.
You don't have to pay to attend Hogwarts. It's free tuition. Free you have tuition. To pay for your own supplies.
Oh, okay. So not so free then.
Yeah. But there's also a fund, like some sort of discretionary fund set up for people who can't afford their own supplies.
Right.
Like Tom Riddle. Because he's an orphan and from the Muggle world, he doesn't have any galleons or whatever. So they pay for all of his supplies.
True. And I guess like there's secondhand books and stuff at the school and you can go to secondhand robes. So you don't have to go to Madame Malkin's and stuff like that. But yeah, okay. There are measures in place.
Yeah. So education is free. Transport was the next one that I wanted to talk about. You have to pay for flu powder. Mm-hmm. You have to pay to board the night bus. You have to buy a broom. Mm-hmm. But apparition is completely free. Port keys, do you think they're free?
I think if you want a registered one, you might have to sign a form or something, which might be a bit of money. Make an unregistered one, nope.
Yeah, exactly.
That's free, but it's also very illegal. Like, you could possibly go to jail for that, like, if you do it enough times.
Yeah, again, I feel like a lot of stuff you could do for free, but it's probably illegal to do so.
Yeah. What was that? I was going to say something about apparition. Oh, yeah. So apparition is free, but it's also, like, hard. You have to go to school. Or, like, no, actually, you have to learn to apparate by paying, like, 30 galleons or something, right?
Yeah, you have to pay for the class to do it. And I assume you have to get a license. You would probably have to pay for that license as well. True. And maybe it needs to be renewed every now and then.
So, again, learning it legally and officially is not free. Mm-hmm. But if you have an older brother that wants to teach you apparition, you could probably learn to do it for free.
Yeah, you can get around a lot of these things.
Yeah.
I think probably to have your house connected to the flu network is a fee of some kind.
So you do have to pay for your house. Oh, yeah, I suppose to go shopping faster.
To get at places.
Yeah, but then other people can get to your place. I guess you could have it like as it's only an outgoing flu powder network, not an incoming.
Well, then you can't get home.
Well, then, yeah, you just apparate home or something. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know why it's easier. Because, like, I'm just thinking about it logistically. Like, I don't want people in my house.
Yeah.
Like, I guess there's something you can do where it's like, oh, yeah, this is a private, like, flu network thing. That means you probably can't just pop up in a shop at any time, too, because you could just rob the store after hours.
Yeah, the flu network is, like, all connected. I don't think you can have a private flu network, because then, what, you're just connected to, like, your friends' houses?
I don't know.
I think it's, like, an opt-in, opt-out sort of thing, that you either do it or you don't.
Yeah, there's no way I'm doing that. Yeah.
A common thing that I definitely see in fan fiction all the time is the idea that you can, like, block your flu or turn it off for certain hours of the day. But I don't know if that's from the series or if that's just we all collectively decided that's the only thing that makes sense.
That's definitely not from the series. That's definitely something the fandom came up with.
Yeah. Well, yeah, like you said, you would have to because it's possible to flew directly into stores.
Yeah.
And, like, I could just flew into a store in the middle of the night and take shit and leave. But once again, like, I can break the law.
Yeah.
I will probably get caught.
Yeah.
I could also break into a store now with a brick. It's not hard.
But we haven't covered how Magical Society functions legally yet, and I'm very scared to, because I think it's a bit of a mix of both, right? Like, there's plenty of things you can do, but there's plenty of ways you can get caught, but also if you're smart enough you can never get caught. So it's real scary. Anyway, we'll cover that in a later episode.
Yeah, so transport's something that you have to spend money on. Clothes, basic necessities, food, we know we have to spend money on these, but like, I feel like there are lots of ways to get around having to spend a lot of money using magic.
Yeah, certainly the Weasleys, like, are poor, but they have 7 children, and they're able to get by rather comfortably. Like, I say that in big air quotes. I don't want to be disrespectful to their experience. But, like, you know, if Ron wrecks his his sweater, it's not that big a deal, you can mend it. And, mm-hmm. like, they always have the food available on their own farm. They are able to send all their kids to go get educated. And mm-hmm. even though they have to have hand-me-down books and secondhand robes, it's like, it's still, they're able to get by quite easily, which is
they're raising a family of seven on one mediocre government salary.
Yeah, probably less than mediocre, because Arthur gets fucking shat on all the time at work because of his pro-muggle leanings.
Yeah, so he's in a tiny little office, not pulling in big money.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's much more plausible to be thrifty in the wizarding world, where, like, you can use magic to repair things, or, like, somebody was saying in, like, my researching, somebody was like, well, why can't I just buy one set of clothes and transfigure it every day into a new set of clothes? Because transfiguration apparently, like, doesn't last long or wears down or whatever, but if I buy the original outfit and it's, like, solid materials or whatever, I'm just changing the style and the cut of it, basically. Mm-hmm. I'm not, like, creating it out of nothing and then ending up wearing rags once the spell wears off.
But, like, remember when Marge tried to do that and eventually, like, the whole suit just crumbled away? Like...
Oh, Marge Simpson.
Yeah.
Not Aunt Marge from Harry Potter.
Yeah. Like, I think they're making a good point. I reckon you could get away with doing that once or twice. Like, you have a dress and you, like, change the color of it, you change the cut of it once or twice for a different occasion. But if you're doing that consistently every day, it's going to eventually, like, the magic will wear away faster. Like, it'll only be changed for a few hours before it wears away. And I think eventually, if you're doing that consistently to the same item of clothing every day, it's gonna, like, wear away the actual material itself.
Yeah, like, but, like, regular clothes also wear down with wear and tear.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I also just think a lot of wizards don't do that because they lack creativity and imagination. Because they live in a world where fucking your clock is also a shark that eats the hours away or whatever. Like, they live in a world where you can walk down a street and see a person turn into a duck and then buy their hot dog and walk off. Like, like, they don't have imagination. Muggleborns are a distinctly different type of wizards because they had at least 11 years of their first childhood life where they were exposed to other kinds of thoughts and ideas and different worlds and magical realities and fairy tales and shit. So they might have more of an imagination than your average wizard, but even that could wear away over time once you've been completely culturally indoctrinated into the magical world and left all your muggle self behind. But definitely why that's not happening.
Do you think you have to pay for healthcare, or is St. Mungo's completely free?
It's a good question. I think
you have to buy potions, or you have to buy potion ingredients and make your own potions, which I think would probably be cheaper. Or you can buy the final potion if you're not good at potions. But I think you could also just find or create your own potion experience, ingredients, not potion experiences.
Right, okay. Like, certainly you can buy a book and, like, do your own backyard potioning, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, you would have to be able to. You can just grow all this shit in the backyard, and probably the magical creature parts would be harder to come by.
Right. It makes me kind of think that healthcare isn't free, because Arthur Weasley, like, remember when he got severely injured, right?
Yeah.
He was in hospital, he wanted to get stitches, and Mrs. Weasley scolded him for it because of the smuggle thing, blah, blah, blah. But I also think there's an extra element to that. He had to come home early, right? If I'm remembering right. Like, he was in hospital for a bit of time when he was in his, when he was, like, you know, critically injured, and then he had to come home. But I guess that's kind of normal for hospitals here. Like, you can't stay in hospitals forever, but is that because it's expensive to stay in hospitals?
Like, well, what I was thinking was, if it was expensive, surely the Weasleys would have mentioned it. Like, you know, even if Harry just, like, sort of overheard Mrs. Weasley being like, I don't know if we can afford to have him in there over Christmas. And, I don't know, somebody else saying, like, of course he can. The order will pay for it. He was injured in the line of duty. Something like that. Like, I feel like if that was a factor, it would have come up in the book.
I don't know if it would have come up because, one, it's not relevant to Harry's journey.
Yeah.
Two, the Weasleys are very, proud people, and they're going to be, like, mentioning their money troubles to the other people in the order. So, and also Harry just mightn't have overheard if it didn't happen. Like, I just... It could be that it was too expensive to keep him in there, because when you think about it, it's not a matter of there's not enough bed space, right? Like, that's a problem with hospitals now. Like, We need to clear this room and have it available for someone else who is in more need, right? That's not a problem with magical hospitals. You can expand the size of the room even though it doesn't make sense physically. You can add more beds and stuff like that.
Yeah, you can expand the physical space, but it's there's other resources as well, like the staffing. Yeah, and the potions and shit, bandages. No, because they just conjure bandages out of thin air, so that's not a problem.
Yeah, that's a spell, yeah. It'd be the human staffing element, I guess.
Yeah.
Maybe. Not everyone's a healer. Okay. I mean, unsolved. I would say it makes, like, based on everything else about the society, I do think you do have to pay for healthcare. You have to pay for potions, you have to pay for your ingredients. It makes me think that you have to pay for a visit to your GP to get antlers out of your head.
Yeah.
Because I guess there's a big assumption too, because there's this whole cultural construction of what makes you powerful and worthy in society is that you're able to be magically powerful. So if you have to go to a doctor or healer, better words, if you have to go to a healer to get the antlers removed from your head, it's a bit pathetic, ain't it? Like, surely you can find the anti-spell yourself and figure it out yourself, but no, you have to pay your galleons to go get it done for you. That's definitely a societal attitude that people would have.
That's so interesting. So, like, healthcare is seen as a punishment for people who are too weak to solve their own problems.
Maybe.
Great. I love that.
It's terrible, but that's definitely some wizard bullshit.
That does seem like some wizard bullshit.
I mean, look at what they do to Obscuri and stuff. They lock them away. Like...
locking them away creates Obscuri.
Yeah, I mean, you know what I mean. Like,
yeah.
Oh, your child may be a squib, let's chuck him out of a second story window. Like, there's definitely an attitude of, like, rough it out. Like, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I just think that there would be that kind of attitude towards healthcare as well. Like, it wouldn't be called healthcare, it would be healing.
Yeah. Mm. It's not a deeply empathetic and caring society.
No. It is
very brutal. Another thing I was thinking of was Mad-Eye and Kettleburn, both of whom have prosthetics and magical prosthetics as well. Like, we know Kettleburn didn't purchase his prosthetics after he lost his limbs working as the Care of Magical Creatures teacher, just for anyone who's not familiar with Kettleburn.
Yeah.
Dumbledore transfigured him, like, magical moving limbs, prosthetics, effectively, made out of wood. Right. So he didn't buy those. Where did Mad-Eye get his eye from?
I don't know. It could have been... I mean, Mad-Eye has a bunch of interesting cursed objects he's picked up over the years. It could have been something he found. It could have been something that was given to him. It could have been something he bought. Like, I don't think Mad-Eye is wanting for cash. He's, like, the head aura. Like, I think if he needed to purchase an eye or something to see through, he would be able to do that.
Yeah, what I was wondering is, like, is there's got to be a market for, like, wizard prosthetics, right?
You'd think so. I mean, based off just Mad-Eye and Kettleburn alone.
Yeah. It's kind of cool that Kettleburn just got free prosthetics.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was a teacher, so I'm guessing not getting that great a wage. But then again, it is the only school. We don't know what the wages of the teachers are. They might be really good.
I think they're pretty good.
Yeah, I think they're pretty good. It's the only school. It's like a really sought-after profession. But then again, we've got like a bunch of fucking wild cards in there, like Lockhart. But anyway.
Yeah, well, the defense against dark arts doesn't count because obviously we know there's special circumstances there.
Yeah.
And also, you know, Snape's a traitor or whatever.
I think Caliburn may have been able to afford his own prosthetics, but maybe Dumbledore, as a favour, and because Dumbledore's a kind man, was able to... is like, oh, you know what? I can do this for you. I'm very skilled at transfiguration.
Yeah.
And also, maybe Dumbledore felt a little guilty that Kettleborn lost all his limbs in his employment.
Yeah. So that definitely... that is, like, a concrete example that we have of someone using magic to solve a problem that otherwise would be very expensive to solve. Like, straight up, he didn't have to buy prosthetics because Dumbledore magicked him some. So if you are powerfully magical enough, like, you can get out of spending money on all kinds of shit because you can just magic it into existence.
Yeah, but that's with the assumption that you know someone who is that powerfully magical or you are powerfully magical yourself. A lot of people don't have access to things like that. Like, we see that a lot in the series because we have characters like Dumbledore and Voldemort and Harry. You know, Harry has his own magical power to him. But a lot of your average folk... your average Joe and Joan witch aren't going to be connected to people like that. They're going to be, like, depending on the books that they can buy and the healthcare that they can afford at St. Mungo's because they can't figure out how to get their daughter off the roof because she keeps floating. Like, you know?
Yeah. Okay. What about just basic, like, bills and taxes and rent and mortgage and stuff?
All right. So
a lot of the research that I said is like, oh, there's no taxation in the Wizarding World because we don't see any evidence of it. And I'm like, well, the books are told from Harry's perspective and Harry isn't paying taxes because he's a child.
Yeah.
Why would you just assume there's no taxation?
I certainly think there's a lot of taxation, especially for crimes, because, like, not everything can send you to jail, right? There's certain things we know sends you to jail, like lying about being an Animagus and shit like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Oh, you're talking about, like, fees. Like,
yeah, yeah. Paying a tax. But I certainly think...
I meant, like, just, like, goods and services tax. Income tax, yeah, like, taxes that you pay to the government.
Yeah, I reckon so. I just think that, that's true because, like, I reckon people like Lucius Malfoy get out of paying a lot of their taxes because they have such political influence.
They pay bribes instead of taxes.
Exactly. And then people like the Weasleys are severely disempowered and disenfranchised by that because they have to pay a lot more taxes because technically Arthur works for the government, but, you know, he has such a shit position.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just think, like, in order for something like Hogwarts to be completely free to the students, it's going to take a massive amount of money to run.
Mm-hmm.
Although, does it? Because all of the facilities are, like, centuries old. You've got to pay the staff wages, obviously. But students supply all their own supplies.
Except for those that need the special fund.
Except for the special fund.
Yeah. There's the
Is
food.
It massively expensive? Like, it's got to be expensive to run Hogwarts, but not crazy expensive.
There's the food. They food. Don't really have a farm. They have, like, Hagrid's little cabbage patch, but they don't really have a farm on site.
Yeah, they don't have, like, an agriculture department. They have their own hospital wing.
They have the greenhouse, which could grow some magical plants, but they might need to import other ones for study.
Mm-hmm.
Things like potions and ingredients like that, they need to buy those from Diagon Alley or Hogsmeade.
Yeah, famously in second year, everyone was getting petrified. It's like, well, we need to wait for these mandrakes to grow up. It's like, can you not buy mandrakes?
Yeah, apparently not.
You apparently can't go to the store and buy mandrakes? Can the school not afford that? Students are being petrified. What the fuck's happening here?
Maybe the implication is the mandrakes needed to be stewed and, like, cut up and stewed fresh, and transporting mandrakes is too dangerous. So, maybe that's why.
But surely you could find, like, a potioner or a herbologist or something somewhere in the world and be like, we need this potion now. Make it for us.
Yeah, you'd think, but...
There's nowhere in the world that has matured mandrakes ready for purchase.
But transport.
Well, make the potion then. Transport as the potion.
Yeah, yeah, fair.
Snape not go somewhere with mandrakes and make the potion there? Why does he have to wait for the mandrakes to come to him?
The only thing I can think about that concerns international trade and goods and services is the magic carpets thing and the broomsticks thing, right?
Yes.
So that's, like, probably the only thing I can remember about in the series where I think it's Cornelius Fudge is talking to some ambassador from a different country. I don't remember where. And he's like, oh no, we don't want any magic carpets here. We're quite attached to our humble broomstick or whatever.
Mm-hmm. And they were like, well, the magic carpet is a great option for the entire family to be flying around.
And they're
like,
no, they're banned on the in broom. Britain. Yeah. God.
Yeah.
It just reeks of racism to me.
Oh, like, it is.
It makes me think that a lot of the other kind of international trade that's going on, if there is any going on, is very limited. Like, they're not even letting in fucking magic carpets. That's a great investment. Because, like you said, it's the family package. And it's for people who can't afford or fly a broom very well. Like, it's a very cheap alternative that could have a great impact on the market. Like, it's just very odd.
Yeah, it just seems odd.
And, like, it's part of the isolationism of the wizarding community, right? Like, they don't even talk to their own neighbours that are muggles and trade with them.
Mm-hmm.
Because trade comes from... thinking that, you know, the other party has something that you want trading with, and wizards don't think muggles have anything worth trading, even ideas or knowledge. And trust. There's no trust between muggles and wizards, so...
There's no communication between muggles and wizards. There can't be any trust.
They're completely secret.
Yeah.
So, it really makes me think that, like, in terms of international trade, it's just not happening very often.
It also is so interesting that, like, we glean so much from a conversation that Harry overhears between two people.
Yeah.
Like, yet again, I really get the sense that the Wizarding World is a lot bigger and more complicated than what we see.
Oh,
Because, yeah. Again, another criticism I was seeing is like, oh, here's Diagon Alley, and here's the list of all the stores in Diagon Alley. And it was a list of like 10 stores, and they're all for school supplies. And it's like, well, no. Those aren't all the stores that exist in Diagon Alley. Those are all the stores that Harry mentions because they're the only ones he's going to. There's got to be like a furniture store or something that Harry just doesn't go into because he's not furnishing his house because he's 11 years old.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Stuff like that drives me nuts when they're like, oh, the Wizarding World is only for children. It's like, no, we're just only seeing the child's version of the Wizarding World. It must exist for adults as well.
Well, it's definitely, in a way, also just for children on a meta level because Rowling wrote it like that. She wrote it to be about a magical school.
And yeah, of course.
When she was forced to expand that universe, she really struggled to because it didn't make sense.
Yeah.
So, like,
that's fine. It's a children's series. Like, we only see the part of the world that's relevant to Harry because he's our point of view character. We just know that there is a government and there is an economy, and we have to glean how it works from the scant clues that we've been given.
Let's talk a bit about that economy. I want to talk about something quickly.
Okay.
So, scarcity and inequality exists when it comes to resources like money and food. So, we understand this. There's also no arts or social sciences taught at Hogwarts, with the exception of History of Magic. History of Magic is the only kind of hizzy subject.
Yeah, and like 12 different musical subjects.
Oh, yeah, of course. But that's not like the official list, whatever. All the other classes are basically about making money or capital, right? So you've got except for Defense Against the Dark Arts. But you've got things like potions, right? Mm-hmm. You gather a bunch of ingredients, you make a potion. You know what you can do with that potion? You can sell it. Herbology. You take care of these plants, you can use these plants for a bunch of remedies and magical shit. You know what you can do with these plants? You can sell them. Quidditch. Fucking flying class. Oh yeah, this helps you get around from A to B, but you also know what you can do with flying. You can become a Quidditch player. Give me another example. Charms, you know? You can charm this, like, mood ring so that it changes colour depending on someone's mood. You know what you can do with that ring? You can sell it.
I'm like, confused by what point you're making here.
I'm just making the point that, like, we have a lot of, like, okay, so in the real world, we have classes that are, like, important for us to understand society and to contribute to a capitalist society, right? So we have things like math, we have things like science, we have things like legal studies, etc. And then we have our more artistic classes, which are important for understanding society, but not necessarily for making capital. So there's things like drama, music, English, these sorts of vibes. I just think that there's a certain lack of that in the educational system and more of a focus on classes and pastimes, encouraging children to have pastimes and focuses that are about making capital.
I disagree.
Okay, prove me wrong.
Okay. I just, your whole argument I completely disagree with because it seems so strange. So you're saying that, like, everything that the students learn in school can be extrapolated out into, like, a job or profession, which they can use to make money.
Yeah, I'm getting more into the jobs and professions, but I'm starting here. Yeah.
And I would say that that is the same case for Muggle school as well. Everything that we learn in Muggle school can be extrapolated out into a profession. Mm-hmm. I could use math to go on and become an engineer. I didn't, but I could have. I can use drama to go on and become an actor.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't see a difference between the two. We learn a lot of useless shit in school that we don't use in our careers, same as at a magical school. And we learn, like, relevant skills that we need in our careers, same as at magic school.
Yeah, but there's... Okay, so in the magical world, careers are different, right? So, yes, you can learn drama in school, and maybe if you're lucky and skinny and pretty, you can become an actor.
Yeah.
But in the Wizarding World, it's different. There's a few jobs. There's the government bureaucratic sort of jobs in the Ministry of Magic, which I can't think of a single subject that prepares you for a job like that, but whatever.
Yeah, there's an admin subject.
Yeah, like, I guess in every subject they have to learn how to write essays and research, I suppose, so maybe that somewhat contributes.
We had economics class, which obviously neither of us paid attention to or did well in.
I didn't have
we
also had, like, class.
Didn't you? No? You would have had, well, it wasn't called that, it was called commerce, and you'd take it in year seven and eight.
Yeah.
You would have had to choose to go on to economics in, like, years 9 and 10, 11, 12, and neither of us did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We had, like, legal studies, we had history, like you said, like, all the things that you would need to understand the government and go into IR, for example.
Yeah, but there's no subjects like that.
No, there aren't.
So, like, that's just one point. Mm-hmm. Then there's the other professions, right? There's Quidditch player, there's journalists, where you're a corrupt, bad journalist that doesn't actually report real things. And then there's essentially shopkeeper or business owner, right? Those are, like, kind of the four
areas.
Yeah. Healers, obviously, yeah, healers, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, okay, the thing about the shopkeepers, all the businesses that we hear about, and I know that you've made the point already that Harry interacts with only a small amount of the businesses, but mm-hmm. let's just talk about this. All the businesses are, like, centuries old,
mm-hmm.
well-established.
Yeah,
basically, their roots go way back. Maybe they're, mm-hmm. like, lineage businesses, like, legacy stuff, like, they're a name brand. And, okay, how can you compete? Like, we've seen one example of how you can be an upstarter in the market. We've got the Weasley twins, right?
Yeah.
Like, they are doing jokes and practical jokes and shit like that. So it's like mm-hmm. Zonkos, right? Basically the same as Zonkos, but I guess they have their own brand and their own ideas.
Yeah, they set up a competitor to Zonkos and are basically trying to corner them out of the market, or at least compete with them in the market.
The only way that they're able to do that is through the investment that Harry gives them. If they had never gotten that investment, they would have never taken off the ground. Mm-hmm. And that's, like, you know, capitalism, obviously. But, like, it's worse. It's worse than the capitalism that we have in the real world, because there's such this, like, insular, deep-rooted sense of, like, name recognition and already existing privilege, right? So mm-hmm. the Weasley name is recognizable. Everyone knows who the Weasleys are, but they're not privileged. They don't have any money. They don't have any, like, long-standing legacy of, like, interest mm-hmm. in business and, like, stuff like that, and entrepreneurial, like, entrepreneurism. So I just think if you're, like, if you're coming into the Wizarding World being like, yeah, I'm going to start my own business, or I'm going to go into the world of business, like, you, it's so hard to just go into the world of business. Like, it's just not really an option for you unless you have great privilege, wealth, status already, or are a pureblood. Like, if you're a Muggle-born, how do you participate economically in the Wizarding World without going into a job like a ministry job or something like that?
Yeah, I would say that isn't too different from the Muggle world. Like, you can start a business, but most businesses fail within the first year or 2 years or whatever. Like, it's hard to break into the economy and be successful.
Of course, I understand that. And I understand that there are differences in privilege. Like, obviously, if you come from a wealthy, privileged background, life is easy for you. And that's the same in the Wizarding World. But it's magnified. It's intensified and even more in the Wizarding World because it's so insular and so pure driven.
Like, it's a deeply classist and stratified society, definitely.
It's basically impossible if you're a Muggle-born wizard who is interested in making money in the business sense to get started in that at all, unless you have the help of a wealthy friend like Harry Potter. Like, it's just impossible.
Yeah, I wouldn't say impossible. Like, the Weasley twins were setting up their business before Harry gave them their massive starter loan.
Yeah.
And, like, they were getting a reasonable amount of success. But I think they would have still managed to set up a shop. It just would have taken a lot longer and been a lot more precarious without this massive startup fund from their silent investor, Harry Potter.
Yeah, they would have eventually, over years and years and years, maybe even like their whole lifetimes, maybe been able to set up a shop. Mm-hmm. But even then, they're purebloods. They have the name connection, right?
Yeah, I don't know if, like, the Weasley name is a recognized brand is really something you can say.
No, of course not. But, like, they're able to go up to any other business person and be like, oh, I'm Mr. Weasley. Mm-hmm. And that business person, who's basically probably going to be a pureblood, is like, oh, I know the Weasleys. There's at least that small level.
Yeah, because it's a small insular community. Yeah.
But, like, obviously they don't have the same influence as, like, a name like Malfoy, which is, like, associated not only with, like, pureblood status, but wealth and money and lineage and shit like that, and political influence. But they still have slightly amount of recognition. If you're going up to people being like, oh, I'm Granger, they're like, oh, fuck you, I don't care who you are, get out of my shop.
Yeah.
Like, it's just not happening.
Yeah, I think that's the case. Definitely it's harder for Muggle-borns to break into society, because you effectively... It's like being an immigrant, where you have to leave the country where you're known and have a community and understand the values and move to a different country with completely different, you know, language, values, culture, economy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's incredibly hard.
Yeah. That's the point I'm making. Is that, like...
I agree.
It's like our world in capitalism, but just significantly worse. Like, so much more capitalist. Like, that's the point I was making. Yeah. Do you want to make a point now, essentially?
All right. Okay. I thought you were going somewhere different with that.
No.
It's hard. Gotcha. Cool. All right.
I want to talk about the coins and the values of the coins. Once again, basic shit that I'm introducing 45 minutes into the episode. Okay, so this is back to, like, why is the wizarding money system whimsical rather than functional? Mm-hmm. So we have three coins. Mm-hmm. Nuts, sickles, galleons. There are 29 nuts to a sickle and 17 sickles to a galleon.
Yep.
That drives me nuts. It makes me so mad.
Yeah, it sucks.
Yeah, because those numbers, 29 and 17, are so close to 30 and 15.
Yeah.
And, like...
Yeah. That could make a lot more sense.
It would make a lot more sense.
It would make much more sense, but it would still be a lot more easy.
Yeah. Look, it's not... Everything should be the metric system. Everything should be clean, 10, 10, 10. Easy. Yeah. Done. But, like, at least if it was 15 into 30, like, 15 is half of 30. You can at least... it's at least easier.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's no decimals either. There's no such thing as, like, half a nut or half a sickle or whatever.
No.
Yeah. So when it came to, like, converting those values into Muggle money, JK has said that a galleon is £5. Mm-hmm. Which, to put it into Australian dollars, sorry, rest of the world, we're doing our own currency. You can Google what it means in your currency. A galleon is about $9.
Okay.
A sickle is about 55 cents. And a nut is about 2 cents.
Okay.
Rubbish. So that's what JK says. But then that doesn't make sense. In terms of, like, how much things cost, it doesn't actually translate. It doesn't work.
Yeah, so a wand's, like, 7 galleons, right?
A wand's about 7 galleons, which so would be about 70 36. Bucks. 60 to 70 bucks.
Oh, wow. My math's so off. $36.
No. I said one galleon is about $9.
Yeah, so 9 times 7, 36.
Okay, see, how I did that math was I'm like, oh, 10 times 7 is 70. Right. And take away 9 is about 61.
Yeah, 63.
So it's right. Like $60 to $70.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, there's also, like, a long-standing plot hole that people have pointed out a million times, where, like, each of the components of a wand, like Phoenix Feather, mm-hmm. Unicorn Hair and shit, the components themselves cost more than the wands do.
Yeah.
Therefore, Ollivander's is operating at a loss, because it has to be if they're making their wands. Anyway, that's just a long-standing plot hole.
Ollivanders might be operating at a loss unless breaking your wand is so easy, which it kind of is, but
no,
people
because
are really careful
it,
with them.
If it costs more to create the wands than they make selling the wands, mm-hmm. then they have to be losing money.
Yeah, yeah, I understand that. Like, I don't know how business works, but I understand that basic principle.
Yeah, well, like, it doesn't matter how many wands they sell then. If every wand costs them more to make, then they're losing money.
Yeah.
Unless they're, like, propped up by ministry investment or something. Which is possible.
Remember when that we did that hypothetical where I said that if I got the Elder Wand, I would just, like, start a business where I was, like, fixing broken wands and shit? That was good.
I don't remember that, but that is a good idea.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. Wand repair. Is that a thing? Doesn't seem like it. Seems like if you break your wand, you just gotta get a new one.
Yeah, you're fucked if you break your wand.
Yeah. That would be a good business idea. Well done. Muggleborn, breaking into the industry. It is possible.
Only if you have the Elder Wand, so...
Yeah, if you're the most powerful person.
Yeah.
Once again, it's all about power, baby. So,
oh, look, it's... I'm a Muggleborn, but I was able to buy 12 properties. Do you know how I did it? I have billions of dollars.
Yeah.
All you gotta do is stop buying avocado.
With this simple investment of 1,000 galleons from my friend Harry Potter, the most famous boy in the world, I, your humble narrator, was able to set up a business.
Yeah, it's that easy, guys.
Yeah. So I found a Reddit post by Reddit user Orby Is My Homie, mm-hmm. who basically went through the entire series and every time there was any sort of price or value given for anything. And from there, extrapolated what the money is actually worth. Because JK's bad at math and didn't do it good. So they say that a galleon is worth about $25. And I would assume this is American dollars. Because I'm just going to guess this person's American. Okay. They're not English because they're not saying pounds.
Yeah.
So a galleon's about $25. A sickle is about $1.50. And a nut is about 5 cents.
Have you converted that to Australian?
No, I did not. Because I'm, like, close enough.
No, it's not. Oh, God.
Do you want to do it now, then?
Oh, fuck. All right. What did you say? Fucking Australian. AUD to USD.
A galleon would be $25.
Okay, hold on.
That's going to be about 30 Australian.
So, 25 US. Yeah, 34 Australian.
34 Australian. A sickle is $1.50.
1.5. $2.
And a nut is 5 cents.
Okay.
Well, that'll be like 6 cents or whatever.
$6.90. Oh, wait.
What?
Sorry. I need decimal point. Yeah, 70 cents.
Yeah. Yeah, so not that far off.
No, not 70 cents. Sorry. That's like wrong. Like 6 cents. Okay, 7 cents.
Yeah, can't be 70 cents.
Yeah. Okay. 35 yeah. bucks. All right. For a galleon.
Yeah, 35 bucks for a galleon. And yeah. From there, they're able to figure out that this is, again, in American dollars, because I didn't translate all of these prices. This is the reason why I didn't do it. Seven galleons, a wand is about $175. That seems way more likely in terms of how much it's worth, instead of $35, which was what JK's... Or £35, which is what JK's guess would have come to.
Right.
Yeah. And it means that he gave Fred and George about $25,000 to start up their business.
$25,000?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is the prize money of the Tribe of the Tournament.
Yeah. That just... Okay. About $25,000. I thought it'd be like at least $100,000 or something for the prize money.
It means that Dobby makes about $25 a week because he makes a galleon a week.
Right.
And he was offered $250 a week by Dumbledore, but turned it down. When Harry was on the run and there was a reward for his capture, his reward was about $2.5 million. Oh, yeah. So I'll post a link to this Reddit post where he just basically went through all of the prices and worked them out, because I think it makes a lot more sense than whatever JK said.
Right.
Yeah. That's all. Okay. I just think there's a better money version than whatever JK was saying.
I basically have two more points about capitalism and money. Mm-hmm. One of them is my stuff about the goblins, and let's talk about the goblins, I guess.
Yes.
The goblins.
Let's save goblins for now, because I've got more points about the economy.
Okay. My only other point about the economy is, I guess, more of a meta point, which is like looking at how wealth is framed in terms of characterization and good and evil.
Okay.
So like...
Yeah, definitely.
Many of the evil characters we see, including Death Eaters, come from lineage or wealth or mm-hmm. money. Compare this to the good characters, the Weasleys, who are poor and equalist when it comes to matters of class and politics. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of goodness associated with poverty, such as Hagrid, Lupin. And then there's a complex example of Snape. So Snape was raised not wealthy. He was raised in a disadvantaged situation. He had secondhand clothing. He had clothing that didn't fit, all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Secondhand books from the school. But rather than this wealth and poverty making him a good character that chose to make humble, good, equal choices, he was driven towards badness. And there's a similar connotation with Voldemort, right? Like, Voldemort was raised as disadvantaged as he can possibly get. You know, he's an orphan. He has no name, property, wealth to himself. But he still covets, like, rare and, like, high-value items and things like that. And I was wondering, like, obviously his obsession with being pure blood and blood purity comes from this obsession with magical power, and he wants to be powerful and mortal and stuff like that. But there's also might be this other connotation that he associates with magical purity and magical power, which is wealth, because all of these old families that he was interacting with in Hogwarts were extremely wealthy and had this name recognition and this lineage and this, like... And that would have been something that really drew him to them, I think, as well. So that's just an interesting dive I was doing into the representations of good and evil and stuff like that. Because, like, talking about economics and capitalism in the context of Harry Potter is wild, because a key theme of Harry Potter is inequality and how inequality is the root of evil, right? And we must make sure that we have a more equal society.
So the JK peacefully. Of 20 years ago.
Yeah, we can all live together peacefully and in love. But but obviously JK Rowling doesn't have any understanding of what creates inequality and what manifests in inequality. Like, she has this idea of Muggle-borns as, like, you know, wizards that aren't pure blood, and basically the only way that that manifests in terms of inequality is they occasionally get called a slur.
Yeah.
Like, and obviously there's this whole civil war from a bunch of Nazis and shit like that, but the thing I was bringing up about, like, how Muggleborns can't economically participate in the same way that other wizards can. Mm-hmm. Muggleborns are culturally and historically removed from society. Like, they have to completely adapt and take on wizarding society and basically disenfranchise themselves in their own original families and histories. Yeah. Like, J.K. Rowling just doesn't take time to explore that or bother to go into that because she doesn't understand how inequality works. Mm-hmm. So, it's just... I guess I was just thinking about all of that in a big, like, mess of thoughts when I was doing my look into economics and capitalism in the series. And I don't really know if I have an answer, like a definitive one-to-one being, like, wealth bad, poor good. Mm-hmm. Because obviously we have exceptions like Harry.
I was waiting for you to mention Harry.
Yeah, Harry, who's extremely wealthy. He is half-blood, but that's still... He has the attachment to the Potter name, which is, like, a pure-blood family. But he was raised in poverty, and...
Yeah. Harry was raised in absolute poverty, where, like, he didn't own anything. I think he even has to, like, steal a broken alarm clock and fix it in order to wake up in time.
Harry was raised Cinderella, right? Like, he was raised as a servant in his own family and stuff like that.
And then he meets Prince Charming, Hagrid, who takes him to his Gringotts vault.
Yeah.
And suddenly he's wealthy beyond his wildest imaginings.
Yeah, but Harry's sort of still dislocated from his own wealth. Like, he doesn't understand where that wealth came from and doesn't seem to have any sense of responsibility for the potion empire that he's kind of responsible for.
Yeah.
He doesn't care about money. He just gives it to his friends. He doesn't see it as something that's going to secure his own financial future because he doesn't really see himself as having a future. But anyway, it's just like I'm trying to create a definitive statement for what the series is trying to tell us about wealth and capital and good and bad, and I can't.
Okay.
So I need your help.
Here's what I think.
Okay.
You got to think that JK started this series when she was living in poverty.
Yeah, she was raised in middle class, like, circumstances, but then went
I think lower middle class.
No, I mean, her parents were, like, scientists and shit like that.
Oh,
like,
were
she
they?
Was getting bank.
Okay, never mind.
But then lived in a poverty situation, but still was able to live with friends, so she had some kind of social network.
Yeah,
she wasn't homeless, as she claims, but...
Well, she was homeless, but she didn't own her own home. Like, she wasn't paying her own rent.
She was unhoused, but she wasn't living on the streets.
Yeah, she wasn't living... A lot of people hear that she was homeless and think that she was living on the streets, and then feel like they've been lied to. And they find out she was effectively couch surfing and living with different people.
Yeah.
But that's still a form of homelessness.
Oh, yeah. She was certainly in a terrible financial place for a long time. And that's a significant thing as to why she's included the series, this aspect of wealth into the series.
Yeah, the idea that, like, you know, she was going to cafes and bars and stuff and writing there because she couldn't have heat at her place because she couldn't afford it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she was in a state of poverty when she was writing these books. So earlier on in the books, poverty is associated with goodness and wealth is associated with badness, the Malfoys and the Weasleys. Yeah. Then her books become massively, massively successful and she gets a shitload of money.
Yes.
And by the end of the series, we're seeing Voldemort and Snape coming in who are bad people who are also poor. The themes have become muddled because her circumstances have changed so rapidly. And what we now know about her 20 years in the future is that she apparently has no, like, willpower. Like, her brain is just affected by whatever she's told.
Yeah.
She like can't, like... Yeah, like a toddler.
Yeah.
Dragging JK again this episode. So, yeah. The same thing happened to her that happens to anyone who gets a lot of money, is they turn evil.
Except Harry. Harry didn't turn evil.
Harry's fine. When you get a lot of money, it changes your entire... there have been actual studies on this.
Yeah.
When you become rapidly, rapidly rich, it changes your entire perspective on, like, wealth and greed and, like, the value that things should be placed... The value that should be placed upon things. So, like, her whole just worldview changed. Mm. And she started, maybe not even consciously, associating poverty with badness and wealth with goodness. Mm-hmm. And so when she was writing bad characters in the later books, she made them poor and made their poorness a despicable quality.
Interesting.
Yeah, she probably did it without even thinking about it, because as she does so many things.
I mean, I think she intended Snape's character to be good, but I don't know. Like, I see him as despicable, so I can agree with your point there.
Mm. Well, like, even just straight up, the idea that Voldemort is raised as a penniless orphan, and mm-hmm. then he is a bad person for coveting other people's things, which starts out as, like, yo-yos the other children yeah, have or whatever.
He steals, like, a nickel and an egg cup and shit. Like,
yeah. As, like, he would have been growing up in the Depression.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of, like, 1920s little orphan boy objects, and all I yeah. came up with was an egg cup.
Yeah, not a toy, but okay. Yeah, and it's like, oh, as punishment for this, he gets his wardrobe set on fire and believes that all of his earthly possessions are being burned before his very eyes.
Yeah.
Like, a truly fucked thing. But Harry, who was also raised a penniless orphan, gets this massive amount of wealth delivered to him basically through inheritance, through absolutely no work of it on his own.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see Harry wandering around being like, I want to buy a solid gold cauldron. I want to buy solid gold gobstones. And that's like, haha, childish innocence, and not a deeply, not like a sign of a deeply terrible character flaw that must be punished and like a sign of his evil to come.
True, true, good point.
Yeah. Voldemort was evil because he stole.
That's what I was trying to get to.
Yeah, thank Voldemort you. Is evil because at age 11 he stole a yo-yo from another orphan. Harry is not evil because he wants a solid gold cauldron.
And is thinking of spending just so much of his savings on a broom that he doesn't need because he already has a good broom.
Yeah, literally, like, he covets the firebolt so much, and that's such a, like, a plot point in book three is he wants that firebolt so badly.
Mm. But then he's like, oh, I've really got to think about saving all this money for, like, my future. Yeah. Shit. Like, he has that thought in the back of his mind, like, I can't just buy, like, a $16 million firebolt because, like, yeah. I might need a house one day.
Exactly. But, like... the only reason why he doesn't do it is because he's like, I can't spend literally all the money I have on this firebolt. Mm. Even though... he probably could spend a lot of money on the firebolt, because I don't think Harry really knows where his money comes from. He knows he gets it from his parents.
Yeah.
But I don't think he understands that, like, he owns...
Sleakeasies.
He owns Sleakeasies. Or, like, he's getting, at the very least, royalties from Sleakeasies. So that money isn't just sitting there. He's earning more money passively, just by living. Maybe he definitely has no idea about that.
No, he doesn't. Maybe he also subconsciously thinks that, I don't need to buy the firebolt, someone will buy it for me. And he's right!
And he's right. He's it right. does happen.
Oh, yeah. That's just good stuff. I guess all I have left to talk now about is the goblins, and we need to talk about them, unless you have something else you want to add to this.
Yeah, well, I wanted to talk a little bit about the, like, physical money. Sure. Which I've already done about the coins and shit. But, like, it really seems like everyone is carrying around, like, a sack of coins with them everywhere they go.
Actually, I wanted to talk about this too. Yeah, why is it like that? Like, we have invisible money in our world. And we have the idea of, like, deeds and stuff like that. Like, you have a deed to a property and you have investments. You can't just get a loan from Gringotts Bank. They're not a bank. They're a fucking safe. You just put all your silver.
We've got to talk about Gringotts as well. We haven't really talked about Gringotts yet. This episode's going to be fucking long. Sorry.
It is.
It's the economy. Like, it's a whole thing. Okay. So, originally I was thinking, there's no credit in this world. It's all physical, real money. Like, I think when the Hogwarts teachers get paid, like, the goblins go into Hogwarts Vault, which I guess is supplied by the Ministry, take money out of Hogwarts Vault, take it to the teachers' vault, and put the coins there, and that's how they get paid. And then if they want money, they have to travel to Gringotts and take the money physically from the vault.
Yep, 100%, that's what's happening.
Okay, good. We're both on the same page. Because there's talk in book five, I believe, like, oh, there's now a 5-hour wait to get money out of your vault. So it doesn't seem like I can walk into Madame Malkin's and be like, I need a new set of robes, charge it to my Gringotts vault, here's the number. No. Like how I would with a credit card or a debit card in the real world.
No.
Like, I don't have to take my money into the IGA. I can just flash a card and that somehow it comes out of my bank account.
It's all invisible. We don't know
somehow.
How it works.
Somehow. Through electricity. So, like, even though they don't have, you know, FPOS machines, they should still be able to do that with, like, a money order or a check or something.
Yeah.
Like, paper.
Some kind of magical fucking card, okay?
Yeah. It doesn't seem like they do, but there is the one exception, which is when Sirius Black buys the Firebolt. Because how he does that is he writes down on a piece of paper, I want to buy one Firebolt, take the money out of this account, ties it to the collar of a cat, and sends the cat into quality Quidditch supplies.
Yep.
I actually think he sends the cat to the post office, and the post office sends the letter to quality Quidditch supplies.
Yes.
So, it is possible, I would assume, for a large enough purchase for it to be charged directly to your Gringotts vault.
Maybe. Or maybe it was name recognition. But then again, he couldn't... Okay, if you're
it
the
can't
quality...
be. He was on the run.
He was on the run. Yeah, yeah. I was about to say.
It can't be like I'm Sirius Black. Get my money.
Because obviously, if you're like Lucius Malfoy and you want to buy your son's team 16 fucking Nimbus 2001s,
yeah,
you can do that. You can like just put in, like, you can just go to the fucking store or like send them a letter being like, I'm Lucius Malfoy, do it.
Yeah, but I don't think you have to carry 60,000 galleons into the store.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, it must be that like maybe the vault's number itself was enough to, like, maybe the quality Quidditch supply owner was like, oh, this is bullshit, but then he took it to the bank and the bank was like, oh no, this is like a fucking intense vault, this is like the black vault, like, yeah, you know. I don't know.
It's also very interesting that if you're a criminal and you're sentenced to a lifetime sentence in Azkaban, the goblins still keep all of your gold and like the ministry can't cut off your funds or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. The ministry definitely doesn't have jurisdiction over Gringotts. Like, they can't freeze Sirius Black's account. So I think, theoretically, if Sirius Black had made it into Gringotts without being detected, he could have been like, I want some money out of my vault, please. And the goblins maybe wouldn't have called the cops on him. They would have just given him his money and sent him on his way.
Yeah, it seems like the Gringotts and the goblins work outside the jurisdiction of the government. Because also, think of Grimmauld Place. Like, that was Black's property. That was, had, like, some kind of deed or ownership of that house. And it wasn't like that was handed over to the ministry or anything like that. Or any kind of public good administration, like what they
do. Yeah, it definitely wasn't seized by the government.
No, it was just sitting there.
He was able to will it to Harry on his death. And we know that Sirius's vault got emptied and the contents added to Harry's. So Harry didn't inherit the vault itself, but he got all the contents.
Yeah, which would have made him even more rich. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a wealthy boy. So, I just wanted to point out that Muggles have had paper money since the 11th century. And we've had bills of exchange, which is the earliest form of credit, since the 18th century. Mm-hmm. And wizards are still carrying around their heavy coins.
Yeah.
I really feel like it's coins for like 90% of purchases, and then for big shit, like brooms, which are massively expensive, and houses and stuff, you can charge it directly to your vault.
Yeah, and the goblins just straight up remove that amount of galleons or gold or silver or whatever from your vault.
And take it to another vault and leave it there, and that's how money is exchanged.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
Great, cool. Okay, we should talk about Gringotts.
Yeah, let's talk about Gringotts. Let's talk about the goblins. I think before we even get started on the goblins, like, I know I already got a bit started at the beginning of this episode, but we need to bring up anti-Semitism, right?
And yes, of course.
The trope.
Yeah, God, we should have said it at the top of the episode.
Yeah. Yeah, it's anti-Semitic.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's so clear to me. Like, there's plenty of people out there who try to be like, oh no, she's just drawing from fantasy tropes. Bullshit, she is. Like, the idea that, like, goblins are loathsome little creatures, sure, that's in a lot of fantasy, like, books, like Tolkien and stuff like that, and the existing lore and myth around goblins.
Yeah. But
never before had they been moneylenders and sitting behind a desk controlling all the gold. Like, that was something that was uniquely Rowling.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, I think, like, the idea that, you know, goblins are, like, greedy, despicable, money-hungry little thing, like, that comes from the folklore, and the folklore itself is anti-Semitic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, yeah, then the decision to turn them into the bankers who are distinctly not human and also have, like, literal control over the entire economy.
Mm-hmm.
And are hated by everyone. There's, like, a quote from a Death Eater that's like, we hate our little long-fingered friends. They're despicable. Yeah. I would get rid of them, but we need money.
Yeah, it's not good. Like, and also the description of their features just goes into anti-Semitic tropes. It's just not good. Like, yeah.
Yeah, it's bad.
It's bad.
There's not, like, neither of us are Jewish. There's probably not really much nuance we can add to this conversation that hasn't been done before, other than calling it out as terrible.
Yeah, no. What else have I got to say about goblins? Oh yeah, just my argument around, I think that they control the means of production in a sense. Like, I think that they control the metals and that they can manipulate the metals magically. Like, I think that's what goblin magic is. You know, they create these incredible jewels and weapons and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I think, because I was trying to look into the Goblin Rebellions, because they've always fascinated me.
Yeah, there's not a lot of information on the Goblin Rebellions.
There really
and
isn't.
And what we do know is grim.
Yeah. What we do know is that goblins were systematically killed by some fella, just a wizard, that was just going around systematically serial murdering goblins for no reason.
Yeah, just like literally a serial killer who was targeting goblins.
And then they put his name and face on a chocolate frog card, because why not? That's cool.
And that was a source of one of the Goblin Rebellions. They were like, please stop this maniac from killing us. And presumably the government was like, no, and that's why there was a rebellion.
Yeah. Another source of a rebellion is goblins being treated like elves, like slaves.
Mm-hmm.
There was
a movement to literally enslave them.
Yeah.
Like the house elves, and they rebelled against that. Shocking.
Another big source, which must have happened, I think, the most recently, is goblins saying that they want to use wands. They want to have the same access to wands as wizards do. And then the government, I presume, made some sort of legislation on wands saying, no, you can't.
Yeah, it's for goblins. It's literally illegal for non-human creatures to use wands.
Yeah. Fucked.
Yeah.
Real fucked.
Yeah, they're literally just an oppressed class. Oppressed race.
And not just goblins too. Like, we also know this happens to elves, centaurs. Any non-human can't use a wand. Mm-hmm. So technically, would Lupin be allowed to use a wand if people knew he was a werewolf?
Oh, interesting. I would say yes, because he's still a human. He's just a human with, like, a medical condition. And the medical condition is deeply stigmatized. And, like, he can't work, he can't be around children, all that sort of shit. But he's still able to use a wand.
Okay. But yeah, anyway, back to goblins.
Mm.
Yeah. Real grim. Real grim. Like, basically, I wanted to learn more about what happened in these rebellions. Like, how did the goblins fight? Like, did they get close to winning? Did they ever win one of these rebellions? I don't know. Like, they obviously would have won the enslavement one, because we know that they're not enslaved like house elves.
Mm-hmm.
But they still are second-class citizens like house elves. And they could despise even more than house elves by wizards. Like,
what? Yeah. I wish there was more information on the Goblin Rebellions. We wanted to do an entire episode on the Goblin Rebellions and decided not to, basically just because there isn't enough information and we thought we could combine it into the economy one.
Mm-hmm.
You've only got a year, guys. We've got to be efficient.
Yeah.
My question about the Goblin Rebellions is, what happens to Gringotts and the economy during these rebellions?
I think there was mention of, like, the wizards tried to take over Gringotts at some point.
The Ministry has had control of Gringotts at certain points.
Yeah.
But effectively, like, Gringotts was owned by the goblins, then the Ministry took control of it, then the Ministry granted it back to the goblins, then it was seized by the Ministry again for a short period. Like, it has gone back and forth. At the time the books are set, the Gringotts is owned and controlled by the goblins, except when Voldemort takes control.
Yeah.
When the Ministry swoops back in and takes control of it again. So, if in fifth book there is like a 5-hour wait for gold, and by the way, it's fucked that Bill can just take money out of Harry's vault.
Oh, wait, what? That happens?
Yeah, that happens. It's literally... Okay, let's go through this... No, hang on. Let's put a pin in that. I'll come back to that in a sec.
Yeah.
In fifth book, there's a 5-hour wait for money.
Sure.
So obviously people are like scared and there is effectively a bank rush. Everyone's trying to take their money out of the bank because everything's going bad and they want to have access to their gold in case things get worse, which does happen. And Voldemort takes control of the bank. So surely during every single one of these goblin rebellions, the goblins are like, well, our number one power move is we shut down the bank and nobody takes money in or out. And that grinds the economy to a halt.
Yeah, that's how I assume the rebellions would be fought. Not like a hot conflict. Like, you know, they're going out into the streets and smashing property and killing wizards and wizards are killing goblins. But more like, you know, a cold conflict where they're shutting off
the economy. More like a strike.
Yeah, a strike. They're shutting off the economy. And they're being like, we will not give you your money back until you give us our rights. Like, that's how I assumed it went, but apparently not.
Yeah, apparently there are actual bloody conflicts. Like, there was a battle near Hogsmeade, and they were using, like, an unnamed bar, which has got to be either the Three Broomsticks or whatever.
Hogshead.
Aberforth's bar is Hogshead, thank you. Mm. They've got to be using that as, like, their fortress, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there was actual, like, fights. I was about to say physical fights, but probably more magical fights. Okay, it's got to be a combination of both. You would have to assume, like, if you were any sort of logical person, which maybe is not the case, because this is Harry Potter we're talking about.
Yeah.
If I'm a goblin and I'm rebelling against Wizard Society, my first step is being like, well, we've got your money, fuck you.
Mm-hmm. What are you going
to
do?
Come and get it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Making Gringotts my fortress, because that's the obvious fortress point.
Yes, it's the safest place, instead of some random bar next to Hogwarts, the wizard's greatest fortress. Anyway,
yeah.
Stupid.
Yeah.
I think that's why the goblin... I think this is why there's still a power struggle between the goblins and the wizards, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because wizards have this superior magical power because they have access to wand lore.
Yeah.
Goblins have this superior economic power, and the reason why they're still clashing and one hasn't, like, completely eradicated the other is because they can't. There's this power imbalance.
Right.
So I think, like you said, goblins weren't enslaved. They didn't win the wand lore battle, but they must have, like, slowly over the centuries or millennia have been, like, gaining rights because they have this economic powerhouse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I suppose. But the thing is, like, I don't know if wizards know this, but economy is fake. Like, they could just be like, oh, actually, we're not going to put our wealth in precious metals and precious stones and coins anymore. We're going to use boots to trade for everything. And everyone has to have a certain amount of boots to buy another pair of boots or whatever. Like, they could just decide that at any point.
Yeah, it's more complicated than that, but yes.
Like,
money is like a cultural, not a cultural, it's a mass consensus. We all decided money has
currency
value.
Currency and stuff like that. They could create a new currency, which isn't one in control by an enemy, essentially. Like,
Yeah, the Ministry of Magic could set up their own mint, effectively, and be like, now instead of galleons and sickles or whatever, we're transferring to tin coins or paper money.
Yeah.
Now we're going to have cash. And instead of putting your money in Gringotts, you put your money in the Ministry Bank.
Mm-hmm. So why don't they? Like, I mean, obviously they'd get another rebellion. But they've been able to quash these rebellions before because, obviously, the power of having wands and just numbers, I assume. Like, I think wizards might outnumber goblins, but that's an assumption.
I think so.
That's an assumption on my part. But the only time we see goblins is in Gringotts.
Yeah.
And it's all men.
Or sometimes doing crime. Yeah, do we see any female goblins?
Not straight up, no. So, we don't know anything about... I mean, we assume that there might be two genders. We don't know if goblins have two genders or if there's more. Or we don't know. So, we don't know anything
about... You know, we don't see any female centaurs either. Like,
yeah. We don't know anything about goblin society or culture.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've always assumed that wizards outnumber goblins because... Goblins seem to have these intense powers and abilities and drive to want to have more rights than they do, but they just can't. They just can't get there, which makes me think they're outnumbered and out-resourced.
Yeah, it must be a lack of numbers, a lack of magical power, definitely a lack of political power, because political power comes from those first two things, because they've got the money, they've got wealth.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, no, because... So much of wizarding wealth is like, oh, I've got these, you know, goblin-made dishware or whatever. I've got this goblin-made crown or whatever.
Yeah.
And we know that part of how goblins view property is that you, when you buy something goblin-made, you effectively rent it for the period of your lifetime.
Yeah.
So, throughout history, goblins have been making these, I would say, incredibly valuable and incredibly beautiful, like, masterworks of... metal and stuff, and then the wizards have been, from the goblins' perspective, stealing these things from them.
Mm-hmm.
So goblins might have had a lot of wealth that has been slowly whittled away over centuries and centuries, and now the wizards have taken all of their shit.
Right. So your assumption is, like, the goblins' creation of beautiful objects and weaponry and stuff is finite. It's not like they're constantly making new stuff. It's kind of like a rare thing for them.
Or like, maybe not a rare thing. I think they are constantly making new stuff. I just think that, like...
It's not as It's not like the dwarves in Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings. Yeah.
The dwarves are constantly mining and going deeper into the earth and making new weapons and shit like that. The goblins aren't doing that. Most of the time, most of the goblins that we see are working at the bank. Mm-hmm. And I guess, like, there's maybe some goblins craftsmen out there, like, you know, that are creating new stuff and things like that all the time. But it's not like it's their constant activity. So maybe, like, mm-hmm. a lot of their wealth, as you said, has just dwindled away over the years because it's been sold off to wizards who are never giving it back because wizards just hand it down as heirlooms.
That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking, like, from, let's say, like, the goblin economy, which I don't think is maybe necessarily separate from the wizard economy, but let's say that goblins were effectively being like, okay, so we've got these masterworks and we're, like, loaning them out to the wizards, expecting that they will get them back. Mm-hmm. But then they never get them back, and that has terrible economic consequences internally within goblin society.
Mm. And maybe not just economic too, but cultural, like, consequences. Like, if these masterworks are maybe the consequences of years of families of time and effort of, like, maybe they have huge cultural significance outside of just the economy, but they're also, like, deeply a part of the history of that family or the history of that goblin. Like, it's interesting to think about it like that.
We know there was, like, one of the goblin rebellions was over Gryffindor's sword. Mm-hmm. Gryffindor stealing the sword from the goblins. Mm-hmm. It really seems like it's that way. Like, I think...
That's fascinating. I've never thought about it like that. I always just assume they're just making new stuff all the time. So I'm like, well, why
I think
are they...
they are.
Yeah, and they are, but I don't... I forgot to think about it culturally as well. It's not just a matter of, like, economics and like, you know, this is ours from like 600 years ago. That's their, like, if that is the center of their entire people, then yeah, of course.
Yeah. Like, I think that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I think that, like, we know that most of the wizard's wealth is in goblin control because they control the bank. But I think also most of the goblin wealth is in wizard control because wizards have just taken all of their shit and don't give it back. And goblins are constantly trying to get their stuff back. And wizards are like, no, we own it. We bought it 800 years ago and we've passed it down and down and down and now it's mine.
Yeah. Wow. Well, that sucks. I mean, I don't really know what more we're saying with this episode beyond here's how it looks like things are. They're deeply rooted in capitalism, worse than our own society. And deeply, deeply disenfranchising and creating ingrained inequalities, and it's just never addressed in the series because it doesn't matter to Harry's journey, apparently, or because J.K. Rowling doesn't know how inequality works, miraculously.
Yeah.
And it sucks.
Yeah. This isn't really an episode of us solving the problems of the Wizarding World. This is an episode of us figuring out how something works in the Wizarding World.
Yeah.
And instead of us, sometimes we do that by being like, here's a problem, and we go away and we solve it, and then we come back and talk it through. This time, we don't have the ability to solve it because neither of us know enough about the economy. So we're puzzling it out together in the episode.
Yeah.
We're asking each other questions and trying to answer them with what we understand. And hopefully we've come to something.
I think...
But yeah, we're more describing the Wizarding World.
I think we've come to some conclusions. One, the Wizarding World is deeply capitalist. Two... the books tell us that wealth is bad unless you gain it by doing nothing.
Through inheritance.
Through inheritance.
No, the Malfoys earn their money by doing nothing, but they use it for evil. Harry uses money for good. He gives to charity and buys gifts for his friends.
Does he give to
and
charity?
Wants to buy a massive racing broom, but doesn't.
Yeah, okay. Wealth is bad unless you yourself are good. Then it's good, actually.
Yeah, the series just doesn't have a consistent standing when it comes to wealth because JK's circumstances change so rapidly.
Yeah. Three, inequality is even more entrenched but not adequately explored or unpacked in the series.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I've gained from this conversation. I don't know, how about you?
Yeah. I definitely feel like I understand the goblins a bit better than I did before we started doing this.
Yeah.
And I wish there was more information about them. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it is like a part of the books that the goblins are so deeply entrenched in society, but we just don't understand or know anything about them.
And no one cares to. Like, even when, when Hermione learns a bit more about goblins, she doesn't have the same empathy or sympathy towards them as she does with the house elves. She's like, oh, yeah, fuck these gross little guys. She doesn't care.
Yeah.
Like, she's a one focus point that could have, like, dug deeper into the whole goblin side of thing. And but she just never did. She kind of did with centaurs. She, like, you know, you could see that she was sympathetic. She definitely did with house elves. She was a muggle-born herself. But we never got her sympathy for goblins. Which is, I guess, kind of Rowling telling us that we shouldn't have sympathy for goblins either.
Yeah, this book straight up does that. Like, let's look at Griphook as a case study for a second here.
Yeah.
So he's Harry's introduction to the wizarding economy, basically. He's the one who takes them through Gringotts in the first book. And he's constantly described as, like, smiling evilly. Sadistic. And stuff. Yeah. He said nastily to Hagrid.
Yeah.
There's, like, that bit that always gets me every time where Harry's like, Hagrid's like, I'm feeling sick, can the carts go slower? And Griphook's like, one speed only, nastily. And then the next line is, the cart was gaining speed.
Yeah.
Moving deeper and gaining speed. Like, he was just speeding up to fuck with Hagrid because I guess he hates him? I don't know. Because he's just a mean little man.
But he shouldn't hate Hagrid. Like, Hagrid's a poor giant guy. Like,
yeah, class solidarity.
You know, come on.
I guess they just hate everyone who isn't goblins because they're inherently bad, is the message. And then we meet him again in book 7. And Harry, kind, trusting, empathetic Harry, tries to work with the goblins and, like, try to defeat Voldemort, break into Gringotts, get the Horcrux, you know, his mission. And Bill is like, Bill, who has worked with goblins his entire adult life, is like, you can't trust them. The way that they see property is different from the way that wizards see property, and therefore they are bad and wrong.
Yep.
And Harry's like, no, you're wrong, Bill. And he sets up this plan with Griphook. And by the way, Griphook is just as unpleasant the entire time this is happening.
Oh, don't forget, Harry plans to deceive Griphook. Like,
plans... I think he straight up tells him, like, we'll give you the sword eventually, but we need to have it for the duration of the war. And Griphook rightfully is like, this wizard's going to take this sword from me and not give it back, as we have learned through centuries of goblin-wizard interaction. And then it's like, oh, Griphook runs away into the crowd of goblins during the heist and betrays Harry, Ron, and Hermione and leaves them without the sword that they need. And this is supposed to be, like, Bill was right. Harry was wrong. You can't trust the goblins. Goblins are inherently sneaky and bad.
Yeah, it's bad. And it's, it's like...
the text condemns.
Yeah, the text condemns and encourages the audience to condemn and not question it. Which is, I guess, which is definitely another big part of why the anti-Semitism stings so much. Like, people could just excuse it as, like... well, there's anti-Semitic tropes across all kinds of fantasy and science fiction that authors might include in there unconsciously, because that's part of the folklore that they're deriving from. And also, like, part of the unconscious racism or bias that people include into worlds like Star Wars and shit like that. But it doesn't feel unconscious because of this, like, very deep-rooted stigma in the book and the fact that we're encouraged to sympathize with the wizards and be like, oh, the poor wizards are being swindled by these goblins that are just like, think that all the wealth goblins belongs are mad to them. Like, no,
the goblins are mad, they're not giving back their heirlooms that they've rightfully bought with money, which is the way that it should work. It's not great.
Real grim.
It would be a very different story. Well, not a very different, it would be a different story if, like, the goblins were the bankers, but they were, like, you know, happy and helpful and functional members of society and treated just as well. And, you know, it was just like, oh, look, she obviously drew on some anti-Semitic tropes there, but it's not like the goblins are evil, nasty people. They just run the bank.
Definitely.
That would be a different story. To an extent. I have some more points about, like, just the economy. Like, I want to talk about Gringotts is the only bank. Are there other banks in other countries?
I assume so.
I would assume so as well, but we know that Gringotts employs Bill in Egypt.
Ooh, good point.
To raid Egyptian tombs.
But maybe that's because... okay.
Britain has a long history of stealing from Egypt.
Definitely it. I'm just going to do a bit of Googling here quickly.
Okay, I'll fill with fluff. Do we basically think that there is a different bank in every country because Gringotts is the one bank for England and we assume all of Scotland and Ireland and everything as well because Hogwarts still gets their money from Gringotts.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, like, you know, a similar bank in other countries. Or is Gringotts the only bank and Gringotts has branches in other countries? Because I don't think people from America or Australia or whatever are traveling to London to get their money.
Right. Sorry, I was just doing a bit of Googling. I thought maybe Egypt might be in the Commonwealth. It turns out it was, but it left after the Second World War. So okay. Maybe,
but that Bill wouldn't necessarily matter for... That's a Muggle thing. That wouldn't necessarily matter for wizards.
I know, but J.K. Rowling draws all of her Wizarding World shit off Muggle shit. You know, that's why, you know, her English nationalism jumps out when she made one school in Great Britain and Ireland for all of the children to go to and then voted no against Scottish independence. It jumps out. Like, you know, so I was thinking maybe it's like, oh, well, Gringotts is kind of the bank for the Commonwealth and Great Britain. But I don't know. But then maybe what you're saying about they're sending Bill to, like, get secrets and shit like that. He's, like, cracking
the curse breaker. He's effectively stealing gold out of ancient Egyptian tombs.
It comes off as British Museum. It's giving colonization. So, like, not surprising that that's happening.
That straight up just is the case. I'm also interested in Fleur getting a part-time job at Gringotts to improve her English.
Yeah.
We assume then that she wasn't employed by the French branch of Gringotts, if such a thing exists, that she came to England and got a part-time job at Gringotts to learn English.
Maybe she got a job through the French Gringotts and went to England, like, you know, got a transfer to...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, here's my question. Are there different banks in different countries, or is it just Gringotts and branches of Gringotts all over the world? Are they all controlled by goblins? Is also my secondary question.
Look, I like to think that there are different currencies, different banks, different systems in different countries, because that makes sense to me. And because the idea that Gringotts is the one bank and it just has several heads across the world and maybe it changes its currency for the different place it's in and it's all run by goblins is very upsetting and very colonialist.
Yeah. Also feels insane.
It feels insane too. Do I think that that is what J.K. Rowling would say would be the case? 100%. I think that she would say that.
Yeah. I think she would be like, I already made one bank. I don't want to have to make 200 more. Fine, they're all Gringotts.
Or she'd be like, oh, yeah, it's not all Gringotts, but basically the majority of the countries have banks that are run by goblins. That's just, like, within goblin nature to be part of the banking.
Yeah, and maybe, like, there's one, like, notable exception that she just pulls out of her ass and that throws everything into chaos.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, one law is the better everywhere, except that there's this one country where they don't use wands at all.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. That's definitely the vibe for me.
Yeah.
Which is
I definitely think all the banks are goblin controlled in every country, except maybe one place where it's different. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. All right. Other just brief points that I have about the economy.
Mm-hmm.
There is an exchange between Muggle money and wizard money, which means that it is absolutely possible to scam the system in a bunch of stupid ways that I just want to acknowledge. If you can, you were talking that you can't, it's not possible to, like, conjure natural resources or whatever, but if it's possible to, say, magic up some rubies, or I could, gold is what I was looking for. Let's say I get some leprechaun gold. I'm a wizard, I get a bunch of leprechaun gold. I go to a cash for gold Muggle place.
Yeah, yeah.
I get a bunch of Muggle cash. I go to Gringotts, I exchange that Muggle cash for galleons.
Yeah.
Profit.
That would be untraceable practically as well, unless you have an Arthur Weasley on your case, because, like, the Muggles would just see that the gold went missing and be like, huh? Like, they would never be able to figure out, oh, it's magic gold that goes missing after a while. Like, that would never...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, like, the Muggles will notice and report it to the Muggle police, but it would have to be happening consistently enough for it to gain the attention of wizards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you'd probably be charged for Muggle baiting.
Yeah.
As well as fraud and shit like that. Money laundering, I guess.
Yeah, Once again, I come back to a point that I kind of made earlier where, like, yeah, it is possible to do these things using magic, but it's probably a crime and you'll get caught eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. I think in the Muggle world, you could probably very easily get away with taking a bribe one time. If you take bribes consistently all the time, eventually that's going to show up in your fucking tax records.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the people that do try and do these things consistently that we see in the books, like Ludo Bagman, Mundungus Fletcher, they don't live good lives. Like, everyone is on their case and, like, it's very well known. So it's not just like they've been in trouble with the law and maybe they can keep that in their past. No, people know. People know and they're like, oh yeah, don't lend Ludo any money. Like, it catches up to them. It's such an insular world. Like, not only would the law be after you, but socially you might be disenfranchised as well after a while if that becomes your consistent hobby.
Yeah, I think if you're a Muggle-born, you could get away with this on, like, a small level easily.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah. Like, if I could occasionally conjure myself up, like, a diamond ring or whatever, which I assume is possible, and sell that for a bit of petty cash, like, I think I could get away with that probably for my entire life and never get caught.
I think you'd get caught.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right. Cool, I guess.
Because, like, the Muggles would keep reporting, oh, fucking gold and diamonds and stuff that we get given to us keeps going missing. And obviously they would report it to the police, but they'd also report it to you. So there'd always be a link back to you. And eventually if the police are getting enough cases and it's like, hey, this name keeps popping up.
Yeah.
Because here's the person that gave the gold.
Here's another great way to do this. Yeah. I get some fucking leprechaun gold. I don't even need the leprechaun gold, but let's say I've got it. I get some leprechaun gold from my friend the leprechaun, and then I go to a cash for gold place and I'm like, give me a bunch of cash for this gold. He does so, writes it down in his book or whatever, and then I'm like, obliviate. And then I leave.
True. Yeah, that would be it. Or you just use Polyjuice Potion, assume a different Polyjuice identity potion. Every time.
There are ways to be a criminal, but the fact is that you, by doing so, you are becoming a criminal, and
we assume eventually
you'll get caught.
Like, I love how we're talking about crime. It's like, oh yeah, you either become a criminal or, like, crime's just something you do every now and then for a little bit of psych. It's like, no, it's a criminal. You're a crime everywhere. You wouldn't steal a handbag. You wouldn't steal a DVD. Like, it's a crime.
Yeah. Again, a wizard, could go in and obliviate a Muggle and empty out the till and get some Muggle cash. But a regular person, could, you know, pull a knife on a shopkeep and be like, empty the till. But I don't do that because I don't want to deal with the consequences of doing that.
That's the only reason she doesn't do it, Liz. She doesn't want to deal with the consequences.
Yeah. I don't want people coming to my house and being like, why'd you pull a knife on that guy? Being like, well, for money, obviously.
Well, yes. Have you got anything else left to say?
I do have more points because it's just, sorry, I know this episode is just going on and on and on. But I want to talk a little bit about the economy in terms of, like, businesses and employers, and in terms of Hogsmeade and Diagon Alley as well.
Okay.
First of all, it's fucked that there's Nocturne Alley. Like, literally, there's a black market. It's, like, there. You can go and get all the illegal shit in a place. That's just such how a child thinks the world works.
Yeah. Toddler.
That's fine. When I was reading about the economy, I kept seeing over and over again, the primary employer of witches and wizards is the Ministry of Magic. Do we think that's the case?
Yep.
Okay.
I think it's maybe 60% of the jobs in ministry.
I think so. I think a lot of the wizarding world, like the business of the wizarding world, is keeping everything under control and stopping people from, you know, stealing money from Muggles and shit.
Yeah.
Keeping the wizarding world contained, insulated, separate from the Muggles, secret from the Muggles, and just under control, because everyone can do magic, and that's very hard.
That's chaotic. Yeah.
That's chaotic.
Yeah.
So I think the Ministry is, like, a massive employer, and a lot of business is just governing. Yeah, and the government is a lot more small and hands-on than our government is.
Yeah.
Because the community is smaller. But I also, like, something that gets brought up a lot in criticisms of Harry Potter is that, like, you know, the only jobs in the wizarding world are working at the Ministry of Magic, getting a job in a shop, being a healer, Quidditch star. Like, you brought this up as well.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the case. I think that's just what we see from Harry's perspective, because Harry is a child and is only interacting in the world in a very small, limited, childish kind of way.
Okay.
I think that if there is a job in the Muggle world, there is an equivalent job in the Wizarding world most of the time. It might just be very different or way smaller or more specialized.
I mean, we already have loads of jobs in the Muggle world that we just don't need. We just don't need them. But like, and that's with the advanced technology and science that we have now. I just don't believe that there's equivalent jobs in the Muggle world to the magical world where there is literal magic that makes things so much easier.
Yeah, well, I think you just have a magical version of the job.
Yeah, give me an example.
I don't know. You said there's farms before. Yeah, I think there's probably magical farmers. Something like... I'm trying to think of something. Like a telemarketer. Someone who calls you over the phone and tries to sell you stuff. I think there's probably a wizarding equivalent of that, but it would just be someone who is trying to sell you like a mail order quick spell course that we see Filch get. Yeah,
that's business, sales.
Hmm. Yeah, I think if a job exists for muggles, I think it exists for wizards as well. It would just be different.
It's basically just sales, government, sport, education.
All the industries that we have.
But no, we've got, like, creative arts. Like, there's plenty of other jobs that are out there. Like, there's no wizard podcasts. There's wizard radio.
Yeah, there's wizard radio. Exactly.
Yeah, okay, you're right. Sorry.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, like, ballet dancer. There's no fucking ballet dancers in the Wizarding World.
Why?
There should be, but there isn't, because we have that whole entry in Beetle the Bard about how Hogwarts has banned its music and arts department. So we assume because Hogwarts is the starting point for everyone in Great Britain, and at least the Great British Wizarding World, there's no fucking theatre, there's no fucking dance or anything like that.
There's music, though. We have musicians, we have the Weird Sisters, we have Celestina Warbeck.
Yeah, music is the exception. But you can't dance or act.
Yeah, but even if those things aren't around in Britain, they might be in, I don't know, America or whatever.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. I'm just saying that I think while the economy of the Wizarding World is very insular and smaller than the Muggle world, I think it's a lot bigger than what we see in the books, because in the books we're seeing things from Harry's very limited perspective.
Sure, I can acquiesce to that and say that there's things outside of Harry's perspective, but I still think that the options are still quite limited compared to what there is in the Muggle world.
Yeah, because the Muggle world has billions and billions of people, and and like advanced technology. The Wizarding world doesn't have that. It's all everything's centuries old or done with a magical spell, and there's only like 200 of us in the entire world.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. My only real last question was about Hogsmeade and the economy of Hogsmeade.
Yep.
Hogsmeade is the only all wizarding community in. I think it says Britain, even though it's very clearly Scotland.
Yeah.
Because JK...
Well, Scotland is a part of Britain.
Yeah.
So...
Is it?
Yes. Okay. That's why they say Great Britain and Northern Ireland.
Okay. I don't know the British countries. I thought England was different to Britain. No?
No.
Okay,
well,
whatever.
It is. England is a country. Britain... Great Britain is Scotland...
Wales,
Northern Ireland, Wales, and England.
Okay,
and then like, I think the UK, the United Kingdom, is everything except Ireland. I don't know anything. Mm-hmm. Anyway,
okay. All right. Anyway, Hogsmeade is the only all wizarding society or town or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So, do you think there is a lot of travel to and from Hogsmeade? Or is Hogsmeade an entirely dependent on Hogwarts and the student of Hogwarts for its entire economy, I guess?
Oh, it's definitely not dependent on Hogwarts for its entire economy. There's certainly a lot of travel. I think everyone, every fucking witch and their dog is heading to Diagon Alley or Hogsmeade to pick up stuff and go to the bar and stuff like that. That's the only cultural hubs they have.
Yeah, it is. Those are the only places that we see. Like, they don't have a Quidditch stadium. We know that because they set it all up for the Quidditch World Cup.
And everything else, they have to, like, wear muggle clothes. Like, be conscious of the fact that, like, oh, we're entering, like, a muggle-only space. Mm-hmm. We can't have our wands out and shit like that. That's exhausting for them. Their minds are too small. They're definitely heading to Diagon Alley and Hogsmeade almost exclusively to do their shopping and regular activities.
The Ministry of Magic, St. Mungo's Hospital, and Diagon Alley are all in the middle of London, the biggest muggle city around. Yeah, so Hogsmeade's the only completely insular community. I was just thinking, because so much of what we see at Hogsmeade, and again, it's all from Harry's perspective, are like sweet shops and joke shops and stationery shops and the post office. Like, it's all sort of stuff that the students would be needing. There are definitely businesses there that are thriving on the Hogsmeade weekends and the business they get from the students.
Yeah, well, they definitely just got shops set up there that are for the students because they're a huge market, because they're, like, right next door. But I think, like you said, those are just the places Harry's hitting up. Harry's not going to the furniture shops. He's not going to the Wizard IKEA or whatever you want to, like... He's not going to the Wizard TK Maxx.
Yeah. Do you think there are, like, wizards sort of, let's say, in London or whatever, who, instead of going to the Leaky Cauldron, are, like, travelling all the way to Hogsmeade and going to the Three Broomsticks for their Friday night?
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense.
Far. Like, think about England. Like, even just for muggles, right? We drove to Scotland. Like, you can drive there. You can cycle to Scotland if you live in certain parts of England. You can do it in under a day. Like, they have apparition.
Yeah,
they
can flu apparate. Powder and apparating.
Like, it's not hard. It's so not hard.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably all of my thoughts about the economy. This episode was almost 2 hours long.
Yeah, I'm so sorry about that.
The economy was a big subject. We knew there was a reason we avoided it for 3 years, or however long we've been doing this.
Five
years, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, how the time flies.
Well, I guess we'll wrap it up quickly. I have been Jem, and I know we haven't answered a lot of your questions today, and I'm sorry about that. But I hope we've given you a lot to think about, at least.
I've been Rhea, and I don't have any more thoughts about the economy. I said them all during the episode. Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. If you want to support us or get in touch, the links to our social media and Patreon are in the show notes. Please feel free to send us so many messages that we go mad and run away to a hut on a rock in the middle of the sea just to avoid them. You'll hear from us again in 2 weeks' time.